Hello and welcome back to another New Era Flames podcast. As always, I'm your boy Cam Elder at LZ14, two Z's on Twitter. And joining me through the other side of the screen, it's our boy the Clovefish, Adam Clausen. Adam, big week in sports. A lot of things happened. A lot of playoff matchups are set. We finally got to put the Flames playoffs hopes to bed. We did that on the show a couple weeks ago, but officially we got the get out of that. A little disappointing, but my guy over here on the other side of the screen has got something that's been eating him up. He's got to get it off his chest. We got lots of time today, so he's got a little bit of a gripe. He's going to get it off, and there's nothing I love more than hearing Oilers fans cry about Oilers problems. So, Adam, the floor is yours, my guy. Kick us off today.
All right, I got a bone to pick here with a certain new acquisition on the Edmonton Oilers. I know I said I wished him luck, and I never really truly gave out my true hatred for Dmitry Kulikov. I've never, ever liked this guy one bit. I understand the move on Edmonton's part. You need a big guy for the playoffs. He's big. He's solid. You can see in his play, he's hitting guys, and he doesn't even budge. And to shout out the boys at New Era Oilers, I'm not telling you that you're wrong, that, yeah, he might have been a good acquisition for some parts, but hearing your little subject really, really ticked me off to the point where I had to bring it up in this episode. And our boy Bob Stauffer even sees it. Everyone sees it. Dmitry Kulikov, he's bound to give up a brutal turnover once or twice a game. That's all this guy's known for in Edmonton, and he's not even been here for 10 games. He's already got that label. This guy behind the net, you should have the advantage when the forward's coming at you and you're the defenseman with the puck behind the net. This guy just skates out like he's walking with his skate guards on. He gets caught every time. He was the direct issue to the Vancouver Canucks' second goal in the game that we ended up losing to the Canucks. He passed it right on the tape. A beautiful pass. Right, I believe it was Besser, but just right on the tape. You love to see it. Beautiful, crisp pass. Nothing Koskinen could do. Couldn't save a shot that night anyways, but still, you give him a point-blank shot right in the hash marks. Kid's gonna snipe it. Besser's got a nasty shot. And this guy's been doing this every single game. I can name three defensemen right off the top of my head that I would rather see in the lineup than Kulikov. That's Russell, who can do the same thing. Lagesson, better chemistry with Larson, and doesn't make Larson look like a bum out there because he's pulling a Rasmus Anderson and Gio and having them compensate for Kulikov's terrible play. And three, my boy, the young kid, Evan Bouchard. I understand, completely different archetype of a player, but that kid's so good. He came in, everyone was talking, how is he out of the lineup already? The kid's playing better than, I'd say, Caleb Jones for sure, and he is coming to his own as well. But, man, this Kulikov guy is just every game. I can't watch when he's on the ice. I want him to stay on the bench. I just don't know what Tippett sees in this guy to constantly give him the minutes. Like, our shutdown D pairing with Larson, it's not that shutdown anymore because Kulikov gives these teams so many good chances. He's so slow. It's just so frustrating to watch this guy, and I had to get that off my chest because I hope that if you weren't seeing it before, that maybe this can open your eyes to the brutal trade to get Dmitry Kulikov. We should have just went after Jamie Oleksiak. I'm sure the guy could have made up. Being 6'7", he's got a longer stick, so if he passed that one to Besser in the slot, his stick could have got in the way and maybe helped old Koskinen out. But Dmitry Kulikov, he's in the bad books. I'm officially coming out. I'm not giving this guy any support anymore. I don't want this guy on the team. Got to get rid of him. I just had to get that off my chest, and I'm glad that's off my chest now. Yeah, I don't know. Have you been watching any Kulikov at all, Cam? Have you seen?
Defensive liability on the Oilers. So all I heard was Winnipeg in six. through all that. You know what? Honestly, I haven't noticed them much. That's usually a good thing with defensemen. I do know a couple of the giveaways you're talking about, seeing them on highlights. I mean, from my understanding, he was brought in as a settling presence. He's experienced, and you're going to need that in the playoffs. I mean, if you should have learned something last year, you know, experience kind of helps. I know a lot of the guys on the team from last year get a, you know, a couple games under their belt in the bubble with playoff implications into them. But from all I, you know, I don't hear a lot of bad being spoken about Kulikov here in Edmonton. You're the first guy really to get it off your chest, I guess. And, you know, I was glad to sit back and listen to it. And
well, it's going to start piling up for sure, because I'd seen it on the first couple of games, and then the next couple of games it doubled. And, you know, when you have Bob Stauffer scoffing at him on the radio or even on TV about how brutal this guy is at maintaining puck possession as a stay-at-home defenseman, a defensive defenseman that should be rock solid, all he needs to do is get the puck to any one of our forwards, and then he can stand still in the D zone. I would much prefer that than throwing it up, not giving a crap when someone's coming around the net after you, thinking you're Connor McDavid and can take two strides and be at the halfway line. You're not that guy, Kulikov. You really gotta. He just seems sluggish and lackadaisical to me, and it's very frustrating, especially trading away another pick. I know it wasn't a super high pick, but this is where the gems come in, and I'm a big prospect guy. I love me some gems, so it's just very frustrating. And I, like I said, I already labeled off a guy that I would have much rather preferred. And if you don't think that he's big, the kid's 6'7". He's one of the biggest defensemen in the league. If that's what you needed, size, call on Jamie Oleksiak. Sure, he wants to play some playoff hockey.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll bite. As a Flames fan, you know, I had to sit there and watch the Oilers game last night with a vested interest. Just, you know, more so interested in just putting this whole playoff chase to bed. Like, in my eyes, if, you know, your playoff hopes lie with a team that could end you by losing and getting a loser point, you don't deserve to be in the conversation anyway. So, like, we put it to bed on the show 2 weeks ago, and I stood by that this whole time. I'd never got my hopes up. And you know what? Even if Edmonton did beat Montreal twice without giving them a point, it's hard to beat any team four times in a row. So even just to beat Vancouver four times in a row, I didn't count that as a guarantee. I was never getting my hopes up. My thought was always, they'll wax them for the first three and then lose in overtime and miss the playoffs by a point, just the way this season's been going. And, like, people forget, like, the Oilers just played Edmonton, and the Oilers are rolling right now. Sorry, the Oilers just played Vancouver four times. The Oilers are rolling, and even with McDavid getting 16 points a night, Vancouver was still able to steal a game off them. So it was by no far stretch a guarantee that the Flames are going to come out and wax Vancouver four times in a row. I believe that's extremely hard to do in the NHL against any team, no matter how they're playing. So, yeah, but watching the Oilers game last night, I mean, I've never really watched Koskinen play with a vested interest, but holy man. I was cringing watching this guy fight off every puck that came his way. And it's like, man, their investment is in a, 39-year-old goalie that he doesn't break down in this playoffs. And what are they going to go to? Like, they haven't given Stalock a sniff. You got Koskinen, and yeah, making 4.5. And man, he's had a rough go of it these last 2 weeks. So, I mean, for them, yeah, Kulikov is one issue, but I think one of their big problems, if Smith does falter or the load starts to get to him or he gets injured, he did leave a practice not too long ago just with some lingering problems. I mean, they got some real issues in the pipes, if anything. And I mean, Kulikov's one issue in your eyes, but I think they got some bigger issues heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, the goaltending situation's pretty bad, and I think they're going to try to ride Koskinen at least till the last game of the year, because they did completely have Smith off of the bench last game, seeing as how when Smith was backing up the last time, he had to come in and pretty much play the whole entire game. So they had the Koskinen-Stalock tandem in net. And I don't get why they're not playing Stalock. The guy's on a super cheap contract. Get rid of the Koskinen deal. Honestly, you can put him like you can get rid of that deal somehow, like through the LTIR. Put him in the minors. Kind of get him playing some games because Austin's good when he's playing games. I'm not saying he's a minor type goalie, but he needs that. He needs to be playing to be good, and he's not playing right now because Smith's playing so good. And Stalock was the guy that the Wild ran with in the playoffs last year over Talbot, over Kaapo Kähkönen. They played Stalock, and he did pretty good. He didn't play bad by any stretch of the imagination. And like, I don't see why they aren't putting more faith in this guy. I would honestly run Smith, Stalock, Koskinen in my order for the goaltending. And yeah, it is. I'm touching on how Calgary got eliminated. It is pretty sad when a team is on a 4-game losing streak and they end up locking down their playoff spot.
Yeah, by getting the loser points. I mean, exactly. You know, Calgary never played up to their potential this season. They never deserved to be in that conversation. I've never had my hopes up. Like I was just saying, you know, if your hopes lie with a team that could end you just by losing and getting the loser point, you don't deserve to be there. So it is what it is. Look, the Flames played twice last week. I'll be the first one to say it. I didn't watch the Winnipeg game. By the time I got home from walking the dogs, whatever, it was already 2-0. I knew Richie was up in the top six or skating with him. So I said, you know what, screw it. I didn't watch that game. Sunday rolls around. You know, I was a little intrigued. Gaudin was in the lineup. The Monahan moved to the wing. So I watched the game. You know, I bite. And they just absolutely fleece the Senators. Where was that the other 8 games? You know, you do that 5 times this season against Ottawa. We're in the playoffs. But, hey, another just, you know, that's just how the season went. It was such a weird season for the Flames. Very disappointing. Very up and down. You know, this episode, we're not going to get too much into it. We, you know, we got some playoff predictions we want to get through. We got some awards we want to get through. Next, you know, we're going to let the season wrap up here. We got the 4 games with Vancouver. You know, one's at like 7:30. The rest are at like 11 in the afternoon and 3:30. You know, we talked about it last episode. We're hoping Sutter will play some of these kids. You know, Ottawa, Gaudin gets injected to the lineup, has a great game, brings that youth, brings that fire. You know, he got his first point. He had a nice apple, and he also gets a big hit there in the third, you know, gets the guys off the bench. You know, it's just the stuff like that that the youth can bring in. They're just excited. You know, they're going to play hard. They understand the situation, how this could be an audition for a contract and for next year. So there's no reason that Richie sees the lineup against Vancouver. No reason. Richie sees it. There should be no reason. Stone sees it. You know, there's a couple other guys that don't need to see it. You know, we're going to get into a full Flame season wrap-up next episode, so we're not going to get too heavy into it here today. But, yeah, it was you watch the game on Sunday, and it's frustrating, but it is what it is. We had to prey on the Oilers. It fell through.
In Oilers, true Oilers fashion.
And the thing was, I watched the game. As soon as it hit overtime, I just shut it off. And by the time that I got upstairs from turning that TV off, got upstairs with David Ari freaking scored. Tell me that guy wasn't sandbagging the last 5 minutes. They knew what was on the line. Yeah, they knew.
Koskinen's arm moved a little weird on that blocker save that hit him in the
last
ribs.
40 seconds of that, they were just killing time, like,
yeah.
I knew. And I saw 97 kind of skating around with like 27 seconds left. And I was like, oh, yeah, just flick it to him. He'll go. But yeah, they knew what was going on.
He's holding the left trigger and skating backwards up the ice the whole time. Just dogging it.
Oh, yeah, they knew. So another big thing that happened last week was the big Tom Wilson incident. You know, we've had some time to sit on it. The league sat on it. They've dished out their punishment or lack thereof. Just a $5,000 slap on the wrist for Tom Wilson. Fish, your first thoughts on this whole debacle, this whole brouhaha, the Donnybrooks that ensued. You know, what did you think of this?
Well, the first time I saw it, I wasn't watching the game, unfortunately, but the first time I saw this was on Instagram, and you know, I saw the beginnings. I honestly didn't even see the punch on Buchnevich in the beginning. It was headlined, Tom Wilson, ladies and gentlemen. So I was like, okay, he's just going to be doing something stupid here, right? And I watched it the first time. I'm like, all right, yeah, I know. He's just doing what Matthew Tkachuk does and sits on people after the whistle, you know, maybe drops a knee on someone or whatever. Like, he's just being a little bit of a jerk in there. And then when I really began to notice it, I kind of looked away and I looked back and I just see Panarin getting ragdolled. And I was like, holy cow, it was, in my opinion, pretty gutless. The second time through, I saw the Buchnevich punch. I know a lot of people said he looked knocked out. Maybe he was for a brief second. Don't know if the punch would wake him back up per se. Could happen, but I just thought it was pretty gutless. And to get the $5,000 fine and that's it, that's 0.00967% of his annual salary. That's a bar tab for this guy. If this guy parties like how he plays on the ice, I know that guy could easily triple that on a bar tab in a night by himself. And with Big Z by his side, you're quadrupling that easily. And then you go after the Rangers, who are pretty pissed off. You know, I would be. The Rangers get a $250,000 fine. That's absolutely brutal. And I don't want to say that George Parros is doing a bad job because I wouldn't want to be in his position. But
careful, you might get a fine.
My God. What? The way that unfolded. And it really only was going to unfold that way with we came out of work that day, the second coming to the Rangers and Caps game, and I'm like sitting in my car yelling towards you, Cam, there's been four fights already. We ain't even a minute into the game. And I pulled up NHL 66, parked it right in front of my mirror on the way home, watched the game, watched all what ensued. And the other thing to that is I think that the New York Rangers now have a number one jersey purchased in the week, and that would be Philadelphia Flyers, Nicholas Obey-Kubel, who ended up injuring Tom Wilson with a knee-on-knee hit. Could be incidental, could be purposeful. Maybe you're angry at what happened, and you know, he took it upon himself, but I gotta think that there's a lot of Obey-Kubel jerseys floating around New York right now in Madison Square Garden if they were all able to watch that. But like, it's just going to happen that way, right? If nothing goes on with the league doesn't properly punish the guy, that's just going to happen. Players are going to take it upon themselves. You've seen the John Scott reply, you've seen the Sean Avery reply, all these people. George Laroque said, sign me on a 1-day contract, I'll deal with this guy. Like, if you get all these legends of the game, legendary enforcers, I don't know how legendary you'd call that, but if you get all these guys voicing their opinion, then clearly something's a little wrong. They did that for a living and they think it's wrong. So you put the one of the best players in the league out for the remainder of the season, that team's fighting to get in the playoffs, punch one of the better players in the head, he gets a suspension the next game. I just thought it was all completely brutal, and of course the retaliation is going to end up worse, but which I hate that, but it is what it is. It's like that in all sports, and I just hope that that's a point at which they can look back at and learn from next time when Tom Wilson does this thing again, which he will. There's no doubt in my mind he will. You can see in the way he portrays himself. Like, you're flexing on a full team for beating the crap out of two of their snipers that don't fight. Like, it's pretty hysterical to watch, and I thought it was kind of gutless on Wilson's behalf, but you know, Wilson's known for those gutless plays. I don't know, what did you think on this whole situation here, Cam?
Well, before I get into my couple thoughts of it, so he got no games. How many games would you have given him?
Remainder of the year, probably. Honestly, it's not many games, and I know he was suspended earlier in the year, I believe, for quite
seven
a bit.
Games.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a decent chunk of this year.
Oh, when you think of a 56-game set, it's more than 10%.
Yeah, exactly. So you're like, I think they don't want to suspend the guy for more than, what, 20% of the year probably would end up being if you give him the remainder of the year. Because it would probably be another six or seven, honestly, on that note of suspending him for the remainder of the year. But I think that would honestly be – that would have solved so many problems and made George Parros' job so much easier. He wouldn't have had to worry about any of this. And there wouldn't have been no retaliation, maybe one fight, not 15, 20, 25. Not having to take players out of the box to throw in new guys. It's nothing like that. What do you think on your behalf on that one?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of moving parts that actually fell because of this. I mean, you touched on the fine the Rangers got, $250,000 for speaking their minds there, and then they end up losing their president of operations and their GM that thrusts a jury into the job. Some different reports that what happened there. You know, I read one thing that they didn't support the message that was sent out, so that's why they were let go. And then I also read on the flip side that they supported that message that went out, so they were let go, kind of deal. So that happened. But to the incident on the ice, I mean, yeah, it's Tom Wilson. This guy's got a terrible rap sheet. He's been involved in too many of these things. And my first part on it, the Buznevich thing, was absolute brutal. Yeah, like you're saying, he's punching him in the back of the head. That's a suspension in its own right, I believe. The Panarin thing, now this is kind of where it gets a little tricky for me, because like when you're in these brouhahas, like the adrenaline's going. It's all you see is red. So the next guy, you know, when Wilson's engaged for however much Buznevich was engaged, but when Wilson's engaged, you know, Panarin is the guy who initiates the contact with Wilson and tries to pull him off, doing what any teammate would do, mind you. But yeah, you know, Panarin does engage in Tom Wilson, and while Tom Wilson's in his rage and seeing red, he's a bigger, tougher boy, he turns around and ragdolls Panarin. I mean, Panarin did come in and put himself in that situation as much. So I believe that's where Parros used his cop out to not give a suspension, is that I get that you want him to suspend Wilson because of his rap sheet and his priors, but you know, I'm sure Parros said, hey, look, Panarin jumped Wilson per se in this situation. All Wilson did was turn around and defend himself, for whatever that means. Now, did Wilson go too far? Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Panarin had no helmet on. He slams him to the back. Boom. Suspension there as well. So there's two suspendable plays on that. And then he's in the box flexing like a gorilla, showing absolute no remorse. Like, yeah, what a goon this guy's acting like. So you know what? Right there, when he's flexing, Tom Wilson, you know, the guy's showing zero remorse. So he doesn't even care that he just hurt two guys. Absolutely, it's a suspendable play. And yeah, Panarin kind of injected himself into there and got himself into that mess. But he's A, standing up for one of his players who's being mugged on the ice. And yeah, B, that's hockey, man. You're in a brouhaha. You're going to grab the next guy up. Unfortunately for Panarin, he gets extremely ragdolled by Wilson. But I mean, that, yeah, two suspensions there on the play for me. I think a lot less would have happened if they would have just gave Wilson the remainder of the season. I don't think anyone would have batted an eye out that. So then, yeah, you have the next game, and right off the face off, you know, three tilts start. Beautiful stuff here. I mean, you can ask anyone. Ain't no one watching that game turned it off. You hear all these people talking about, oh, fighting's a dying breed. We don't want to see fighting in hockey. Who wasn't talking about that game? Who turned that game off after the puck dropped and there's three tilts? Who turned it off after there's two more tilts? Nobody. Who joined in and tried to find the tilts online? Everybody. Who wanted to order that TV package right there that day so they can get hockey for the playoffs? Everybody. You know, passion and emotion is good for the sport. And you know what? Fighting is part of hockey. It always has been. I'm one of the people that believes it ain't going nowhere. Yeah, you're never going to get the stage fights, you know, heavyweight versus heavyweight. These guys are just in here to scrap tonight. You're never, ever going to get that. But the emotion that comes with the game, that the Reeves and the Wilsons, the Lucic's, that these guys thrive on, that's never going anywhere. But, you know, Wilson takes it too far a lot of the times. And, you know, he's kind of picky choosy with some of his targets. But, hey, another thing I thought about that, too, you got Zdeno Chara in that locker room. I wouldn't be surprised if Zdeno whooped that boy into a born again Christian after what happened that game.
Yeah,
for real. Sure. Like, I'm sure that got handled in house by Big Z because he ain't playing any of that shit.
Flex,
so that's kind of where I come out from there. I mean, Wilson answered the bell. He took the fight with whoever mugged him there on the ice. He's laughing about it in the box. He's still having a good time, showing no remorse. He gets an upper body injury. I'm sure he was just advised to get pulled out of that game, so nothing else could happen.
Yeah,
it would have been a lot easier and less headache for the league just to, you know, give this guy the rest of the season, and everyone would have, you know, not been happy, but it would have been a lot easier. People wouldn't have lost their jobs, I'm sure. And I mean, you know, it's not a great look for Parros either. Like, people coming out calling for his head now too, like, as a league and as the guy himself, the head of player safety, it's not a good look. So nothing really good ever came out of this other than a really entertaining second game in a back-to-back.
Yeah. I think the other thing that people are complaining about is, like, look at Parros when he played in the league. Like, the guy did stuff like this. And
yeah,
like,
but there's a code out there, and he worked by the code. Like, he's not a – look, Tom Wilson is a goon, and I don't know how much of the code this guy's ever read, but he doesn't act like he's ever seen the code or heard about the code. But, hey, like I said again, I'm sure Zdeno whooped him into a born-again Christian. There ain't no way he let that shit fly.
The last thing I want to touch about, you said about – Panarin hopping in, like, yeah, he's just being a good teammate. And
hop in and engage in a Donnie Brooks or a brouhaha, you're accepting what's coming next. Like, for you're sure. In it. There's no throwing the white flag as soon as Tom Wilson grabs you and goes, hey, we're good. Like, you're in it till the refs break it up. So that's a risk you take, but Wilson does push it too far, absolutely.
Yeah, you got to stand up for your teammate. But, like, that line, it's obvious Buchnevich and Panarin are on that, but thinking about who's the center, you're looking at like a Mika Zibanejad or a Ryan Strome. Like, who else is going to jump in there? I think both of those guys would have got.
Oh no. Hey, no one's saying you have to jump in there and drop mitts with the guy, but you got to get in there, get your palm in his face, get his attention and get him off your guy. And like, Panarin, that's all you're doing is scrumming it up. Like, no one's expecting Zibanejad in there and go toe-to-toe with Wilson. No, but you get in there, you pull him off, you yank on his head, you face wash him, whatever, man. That's just part of being in the scrums.
That's part of being the leader, too. He's got the A for a reason. So he's like, okay, I'm a captain on this team. I got to stand up for my guys. And didn't turn out well, as we all know. But
no, you see, that's exactly what Panarin did. He's best player on your team. He's the first guy to go in there and stand up against the goon. Yeah, it doesn't go well for him, but hey, that's a team guy. And then you see it. You see it the next game. The Rangers come together. You tell me that ain't a locker unified, especially going into next year. They had five guys scrap.
What,
maybe one of them was a fighter?
Exactly. You got Carl Hagelin to drop the mitts. Like,
exactly.
That's
a locker room united. That brought those boys together. It's unfortunate what happened, but man, those are the moments that bring teams together and, you know, make those bonds, those brotherhoods. But there's enough about that and that goon. You know, we got the playoffs coming up. We wanted to get into some playoff predictions, wanted to go through the first round, kind of touch on every series there, give our thoughts. So I'm thinking we should start somewhere in the East. I don't know the names of the divisions off the top of my head, but let's start with the Carolina-Nashville series. I know you're a big Carolina guy, so let's start a little hot for you. Carolina-Nashville in round one as it sits. I don't believe there is one division that can really change. That's Vegas's division, just with some seeding, but all the teams are set. So we are going to get into some playoff predictions. So starting off, Carolina, Nashville, Fish, who you got? And if you got a little X factor for us, throw her in there too.
Alrighty. So in my opinion, the easiest playoff series, I know I'm saying this and the Canes are going to get swept, but in my opinion, there's no chance for a team like Nashville, a team that shouldn't even be in the playoffs. They should. I understand they had a hot streak. I get that. But all their players that need to be performing that are making $6-8 million a year, they're just not doing it. They're under half a point per game. Duchesne and Johansson are under half a point per game, and that's $16 million in cap space. These guys just aren't performing. You're looking at the Hurricanes. I could say the X factor is the entire lineup. You got your Natchez. If he's on, that's deadly. Svech. You got Slavin if he's back. That'll be huge for him. And then, of course, the goalie tandems. Like, they just got to prove it. It's not a fluke what they've done throughout the year with Nedeljkovic and Mrazek. But honestly, the biggest X factor in this whole entire series has got to be Juuse Saros. Like, this guy willed his team into the playoffs single-handedly. I'm not a huge Saros fan. I don't know why. This guy's killing it right now for the Preds, and he's the only reason this team's in the playoffs. They shouldn't even be in playoff talks. That should be the Dallas Stars spot, in my opinion. But I got to go with the Canes for sure in the first round. I'm going to go with a sweep or maybe one game to Nashville, but... Canes, easiest one in my opinion. Easiest one to decide. What about yourself, Cam?
Yeah, this one was pretty clear-cut for me as well. Like you said, the Preds kind of backed their way in there. But hey, you know, Dallas didn't do anything to earn that spot themselves. Kind of like the Flames situation. You can sit there and complain that, oh, what a weak team getting in at fourth. But what'd you do about it? But with that being said, I myself have Carolina in five. You know, the rookie goalie, this is, you know, this will be a nice, like, feeling series for him to get his first playoff experience, you know, kind of heavy favorites. The only thing, it could turn into a rock slide on him quick. If, you know, goalie is a big mental position. If he gets down behind, you know, a heavily underdog team, you know, that might get in his head, might get in his psyche, and that might start to affect him, you know, and it might start run downhill. The good thing for the Hurricanes is they got a more than capable backup who's been playing pretty lights out himself in Peter Mrazek, who they can just slot him right in if the young kid falters. So, I mean, yeah, I got the Canes in five there. That's pretty clear cut for me as well. Going into the next series on that one I'm actually really interested in, because this is where I think I'm throwing my hat now that the Flames are out. But we got Florida, Tampa Bay. I'm gonna start first. I'm gonna be cheering for Florida, you know, Sam Bennett as we go forward here in the playoffs. That's where my hat's going in. Flames are out of it. I need some reason to watch playoffs, and I believe that cheering against Edmonton's only gonna last a week. So I need a team I can go with. So I'm gonna go with Florida just because playoff Bennett, you know, I love the guy. It sucked to see him go. With that being said, I also really dislike Tampa Bay. Anyone in Flames Nation, I don't have to explain to you why I'm really against Tampa Bay. You should all know this. So I'm going to take Florida with a bit of an upset, I guess, but in seven games.
Yeah.
And I think they're just playing so, like, up and down the lineup right now. Like, Bennett is really slotted in there so nice. He's killing it down there. He's really brought a lot of balance into Florida. And the thing about Bennett is they haven't even seen the best Bennett yet. He hasn't even morphed into playoff Benny. They thought he was doing good. Now you just wait a week till you see him running ruckshot through Tampa Bay Lightning. And now Tampa's got the goalie. They got the defenseman. Kucherov's going to be back. You know, this is a big, big, big target to take out in the first round. But if anyone can do it, you know, the way Florida's firing right now, I really like Florida here in what would be an upset, but not really. But I got Florida in seven games. Fish, how you see this one shaking out?
I agree with you. The playoff Bennett ain't nothing to mess with. I'll just say that. When that the Lanny comes out, he's I've never seen Lanny play in Florida, but we'll see this year. Like we said earlier, he's a different animal. He's going to be an X factor on my Florida X factor, and I also think Huberto. I think Huberto could play huge, but it's just because I think Huberto might potentially disappear as well. That's my only fear. That's why I got Benny as the number one X factor. And Bennett, he broke a record for the most points on a new team. I believed he passed the great Pavel Bure.
Russian Rocket.
That's saying something. Like the kid's on a heater right now for sure. And honestly, yes, Tampa Bay gets Kucherov back, which a lot of people, I don't want to say have forgotten, but a lot of people just don't put that into perspective that Tampa Bay is playing this good without Kucherov. And when you get one of the
former Hart winner.
Yeah. When you get a top five player in the league back, like that's going to tremendously help. And like, you can't write them off. And I agree with the seven games, but looking at Florida's schedule, if I was Tampa Bay, I'd be quaking in my boots right now. Tampa Bay's lost 2 in a row to Florida, 5-1 and 4-0. So that's saying something good for Florida coming into the playoffs. So I know Florida's high on those right now, and hopefully that doesn't get to their head. They got a great center in Barkov there. The guy's always on the ice. He never takes any penalties. He's one of the best two-way centers in the game. Huberto really coming into his own. You got the defense coming out of nowhere. I think Florida's going to, like you said, air quotes, upset Tampa Bay this year.
Oh, you know, another thing I'm pumped. There's some animosity in this series, like some legit general animosity. You hear a lot of the guys on the ice right now getting after Big Rig, Pat Maroon, Fat Pat, all this stuff. You know, like, I'm excited. You know, we're going to see Benny and Maroon square it off. Probably.
That'll be exciting. It'll be a great first round matchup.
Oh, I am so pumped for this one. Partly because I'm throwing my hat in for Florida, but also because of the animosity in this series. You know, it's genuine. I think this is going to be a great series. I love a 7-game set. I think this one goes 7 back and forth. This is going to be a slobber knocker.
Florida's got something to prove.
Slobber knocker hockey up in Florida. Who would have thought? No kidding.
Well, the 16 fans that the Florida Panthers have, they all get to watch it.
The sweet, lucky 16, man, I tell you. So moving over to the other Eastern Conference, whatever they're calling themselves, we got Pittsburgh versus the New York Islanders. Very interesting matchup, actually. Fish, how you see this one going?
I'm going to go with this one's another tough one. It's not as fiery as that, the Florida and Tampa series, but this one could go the distance as well. I'm going to say it's going to be a 6 or 7 for sure, just based off the defense that the Isles put out. Like, what was it last year? They were only allowing like 1 to 2 goals on average per game, which is ridiculous. But then again, this so-called washed up Penguins team haven't won the division. Like, you got Crosby. I think Gensel will be the playoff X factor for the Penguins, personally, because we've seen it before. Gensel just turns it on. Apart from Gensel, you got Jankowski. You never know what Jankowski's going to do out there, so that guy could be a little firecracker out there and be a big X factor. And then for the Isles, they're sneaky scorers. Like, they're top six. They get paid way too much. They all know how to score. They all know how to play in the playoffs. But my X factor is Varlamov in that. As much defense as they play, they got a great goalie playing behind them, and if Varlamov can shut the door, then it's so hard to just get past that defense originally. And if your goalie's on top of his game like Varlamov's been this year, it's going to be tough. And that's why I say it'd be a 7-game series. I'm still going to give the slight edge to Pittsburgh, but this one's probably the toughest decision for me apart from the Tampa Florida series. It's a weird matchup in my opinion, and I had written off the Penguins at the beginning of the year, and look at them now. Like, they don't have insane depth. Malkin hasn't been playing like Malkin. He is getting old, but these guys are just still in it.
And yeah, there's a lesson on all this. You don't bet against Crosby. Exactly. And that's where I'm having a hard time with this, because everything I look at is telling me the Islanders. Mm-hmm. You know what? They don't have problems playing Pittsburgh head-to-head. They have a great defensive system. You touch on it. And even if you get by their defense, Varlamov's got like a 930 save percentage right now in his 34 starts this year. So he's been a brick wall. If you can get by the first brick wall, that is their team defense. So everything is telling me the Islanders. But I can't bet against Crosby, so this makes it tough for me. Like I said, they had a real shaky start here to start the season, but they've really come battling back, you know, on the strength of Crosby. Malkin hasn't really been picking up, but hey, he's been a playoff performer before. And once you get in, there's no telling what's going to happen. And as long as you got Malkin Crosby on that team, two guys that have been there, had their ups and downs, know how to win, know how to lose, it's tough for me. I don't want to say this one's going 7. I think it's going 6. Oh, and it's really hard to say this. It's hard to bet against Crosby. No, I can't. I'm going to take Pittsburgh in 7. I'm changing my mind on the fly. I wanted to take the Islanders. I wanted to. They just playoffs are all about tightening it up and getting that defensive hockey on. Islanders do that day in, day out, 365. Like, that's all they do. So it's hard to bet against them come playoff time. But, man, it's Sidney Crosby. The guy's the king till he's dethroned. Yeah, I'm going Pittsburgh in seven.
Yeah, I
moving
got,
on.
That was the Isles. Like, yeah, they have so many sneaky guys like Bailey, Nelson, Lee. Playoff Eberle is going to come out. Barzell's got to show up. Beauvillier. They're so deep down their forwards, too. And they're not like running gun to the net. It's all like they play both sides of the ice so well. It's so tough. That's my biggest toss up, just like you said.
Yeah, my X factor there is gonna be the young goalies in Pittsburgh. If Jari and Casey DeSmith can lock the door, I think Pittsburgh will be able to get by this. But if they have shaky experiences here in the playoffs, it might get ugly for them quick. Because you know what? A team like New York Islanders, if you get behind, it's really hard to claw back against those guys. But moving on. Next series will be Washington-Boston. Now you got Taylor Hall really starting to turn it up, loving his time in Boston. You got Big Z coming back to the playoffs to play his old team. There's a lot of... You know, this is an interesting it's playoffs. They're all interesting matchups. I feel like Boston's got a little bit more in the tank and is firing a little bit better, a little bit more experience. Bergeron's one of those guys who's hard to bet against. I know Ovechkin's got the fire, but Bergeron just does it so much more on all aspects around the ice. So I'm going to take Boston in six here. I mean, Hall's finding his footing. There's another former Hart guy. So, you know, you can't really count out the impact he has on games. And, like, you know, he's playing his best hockey right now going into the playoffs with this team. And, you know, the rest of that lineup's been there, done it before. So, yeah, I'm going with Boston in six here to take out Tom Wilson and his Washington Capitals. What do you got for us, Fish?
Well, I hate to agree with you on absolutely every series, but I totally agree with you. Just looking at Washington, Wilson's injured currently, and I would put Wilson as an X factor because that guy could swing a series by himself just by his play. That guy's going to amp up
the whole thing. He plays the right brand of hockey. He just takes it too far too many times.
He's a playoff player. And my other X factor, TJ Oshie, the guy's a playoff stud. He's so good in the playoffs. Oshie, injured. And then you look at guys that really need to perform. The only Kuznetsov, he hasn't been performing this year. Ovi, you know, you can never really count out on Ovi, but with all these supporting guys down, it's pretty much the Nick Backstrom, John Carlson, and Alexander Ovechkin show. This Boston team is so deep right now. Swayman, the goalie for Boston that came in, leads the league in save percentage now. And you got Hall and Krejci. Those boys they have the perfect chemistry. Coming into this, I didn't think Hall would fit super great on that, but man, is Krejci ever not carrying his play? But those two make each other look 2 to 3 times better than they really are. It's ridiculous. I watched a bit of that Boston game, and man, I watched the OT goal, and that was in itself beautiful from Hall. And then you got Krejci just dishing these passes. Krejci's on his game. And this is only the second line I'm talking about. You got Pasternak, Bergeron, Marchand. You got to beat that line. Pasternak pretty much comparable to your Ovi. Not going to match him in the historical part, but that's your sniper to sniper. Great matchup for Boston. And McAvoy. McAvoy's quietly having one of the best seasons as a defenseman in the whole league. He's leading a lot of things.
Sneaky
no one's talking
about him. Vezina, sneaky Norris candidate.
The kid's so quiet with his game. He's so solid. I love McAvoy. I know another guy over at New Era Oilers swears by this guy. He's a huge fan, but it's just, and with the goaltending, if Swayman can continue that form and they have Rask for the playoffs, I can't count out Boston. My girlfriend's family are all Boston fans. I hate rooting for Boston, but I got to say Boston in 5 or 6, honestly, in this one, just with all the injuries to to the Caps. They also got a super young goaltending tandem in Samsonov and Vitek Vanacek. They're not proven like Holtby was. I know Holtby kind of fell off a cliff, but still, it's I got to give Boston that one.
All right, moving over to the West now. This division, there is still some seeding that could be sorted out, so we're going to do it based on today's standings. The four teams are the four teams that it could be. The standings could change a little bit. Colorado could pass Vegas for first. Colorado could technically get passed by Minnesota for second, but we're just going to run with them as they are today, seeing as how the playoffs start Saturday. So for the first series in the West, we'll have, as it stands right now, the number one Vegas Knights versus the four seed St. Louis Blues. Fish, how you see this one going down?
This is a tough one as well. I got to go with Vegas for sure. You can't count out the Blues, but the way Vegas is playing is sneaky good, because I literally looked at the standings probably 2 days ago, and I was like, when did Vegas pass my Carolina Hurricanes for first in the league? Vegas is only lost 3 games in their last 15, and all these other wins are pretty convincing. You got a guy like another Selke candidate, Stone. This guy's insane. The way that Stone intercepts the pucks is absolutely awesome. He does the NHL thing where you just put your guy on the ice, and he just can just nab pucks off guys like that, and it's ridiculous. You got Shea Theodore, you got Petrangelo, the new addition, you got the potentially the best goalie tandem in the league in Leonard and Fleury. Playoff Fleury is nothing to mess with either. I love Fleury. I can't write out Fleury. He's probably one of my favorite goalies to watch. He's just purely street hockey half the time. I got to go with Vegas in 6 on this one. It's not going to be a blowout, but because the Blues have Tarasenko, he needs to start performing. I know he's coming off a pretty big surgery, and they got guys like Sundqvist. I don't know if a lot of people know about Sundqvist, but this kid's been great for the Blues in the last couple of playoff runs. He comes out of nowhere. He plays like a number one winger every time the Blues are in the playoffs, and it's awesome. And then I got to shout out St. Albert boy, Colton Parenko. Thank you for bringing the cup to the brew house in St. Albert. That was a good time. What do you think, Cam?
I don't think this is a tough one to pick. Vegas is the deepest team in the NHL. They probably win this division, but for the sake of picking round one, I got Vegas in 5 games. You know, St. Louis is lucky to steal one off them if they do. Like I said, Fleury's playing hotter than hot. And look, I have Fleury as one of the greatest goalies all time. Top 3.
Oh, yeah.
He's top 3 for me. So we're watching him play right now this day. He's going to be entering the playoffs. He's the best goalie in the playoffs. He's the horse I'd put my cart behind anytime if I had to pick one goalie to start a franchise with. For the last 5 years, this year, probably going into next year, my answer's always been and will be Fleury. So there's too much to like about Vegas. They're the deepest team in the whole league just because of the rules of the expansion draft. Yeah. It's easy for them, 5-1.
We don't even,
or 4-1. 4-1 in 5 games for Vegas.
We didn't even touch on a guy like Marchessault, Carlson.
They're too deep, man. What do you want to talk up and down their roster? They're
too
deep.
Their whole line. Yeah, and they got the best goon in the league in Reeves.
St. Louis is getting waxed. All right, on to the next one. This is actually, they're all interesting. Again, we say it every matchup we get to. Oh, here's an interesting, tough match. Well, yeah, it's the playoffs. They're all kind of interesting. This is the best of the best, the 16 top teams of the league this year. So on to this one. I'm kind of really interested in this one because I don't know if it was you sniping me the Kaprizov pick in my fantasy draft this year, but I am a huge Kaprizov guy now. Like, no one knew who he was in my hockey draft, and we've been doing this for years now. You know, I was just texting you near the end of the draft. I was like, Fish, give me a sleeper, because I already had Rasmus loaded up, who turned out to be a pretty good pick for me. But you slipped me the Kaprizov. I didn't even know who the kid was. I picked him. Everyone was asking me who the kid was. I said, I don't know. That's the Fish, man. But yeah, so Minnesota, Colorado. Whoo, this is a tough one. I love Minnesota's jerseys. I love Kaprizov. Oh, and a note I forgot to correct you on earlier in the show. Stalock did not play in front of Cam Talbot in Minnesota last year because Cam Talbot was backstopping us in our playoff run.
Oh, yes.
But, yeah, with Cam Talbot being in Minnesota now, backstopping him, all this being said, my love for the jerseys, my love for Kaprizov, Colorado is just one of those teams that is too deep, and they got a huge horse leading them up front in McKinnon, who is made for the playoffs. Now, that's a kid who's made for the playoffs. If Connor McDavid is the pinnacle of regular season hockey, McKinnon might be the pinnacle of postseason hockey because he takes that speed, the finishing, the hands, the hockey IQ, and he puts it all in that big frame. So I got Colorado in six. Fish, how you see this one shaking out?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I really love me some Wild. I'm a huge fan of Kaprizov, of course. I like Kevin Fiala. I think he's a nice, good little winger. I like, I actually love Joel Eriksson Ek. That guy, I've always liked him since World Juniors. I watched him. I kind of compare him to I don't want to say bootleg Nick Backstrom, but he's like a Nick Backstrom type guy. He just hasn't made it there. And I'd say he's honestly more defensively responsible than Nick Backstrom is, to be honest with you. The guy is just a stud. My X factor for that, for the Wild, would be Eriksson Ek. But along with Jordan Greenway, the kid's 6'6". Ever since the juniors, I remember watching this guy. I was like, holy cow, I want this guy. We need this guy on the Oilers. No, you know, he's a fourth round draft pick by Minnesota Wild. Just sniped him. And then there's Greenway playing on the first line in the World Juniors, throwing these kids around. Looks like a grown man out there. I think that man is built for the playoffs. But I got to go with the Avs in probably five. They got guys like Girard, the second pairing. Don't want to say bootleg again, but it's their little mini version of Cale Makar. And, you know, they have Cale Makar as well. Cale Makar is absolutely another animal on defense. About to squash the Quinn Hughes-Cale Makar debate. Cale Makar by a mile. Calgary native.
Yeah.
Calgary native, so you got a lot of them
with
here
that.
Playing.
It's Makar. Now, the only thing with that is he made his debut against us and helped pushing us out of the playoffs, buddy.
Yeah, so no, I got to go with the Avs. And like you said, McKinnon built for the playoffs. Guy does everything. He's your perfect fantasy player. He does a little bit of everything. He scores, he assists, hits, shoots the puck all the time.
Like,
he's
in my eyes, like, sorry, Toronto, but like, he's really the only player this day and age that you could make an argument for against McDavid.
Yeah, for sure. This year, it's kind of a runaway.
I mean, his points aren't up there, and he hasn't really had huge point producing, but like, you look at this kid, you watch him play, like, he's the only other guy I'd ever consider taking in a fantasy draft first overall tomorrow.
Yeah, and
it'd be strictly on looking at the long game in the playoffs and just what he does. Like, the kid's a horse.
He was injured too at the beginning of the year, and he's like, what, third, fourth, or fifth in the league in scoring right now. And yeah, just best contract in the league, apart from like maybe a Pasternak or whatever. But I got to give McKinnon the best contract in the league by a mile. And then he's got the beast in Mikko Rantanen on his line. Like, it's just so unfair. Rantanen,
oh, they're a deep team. They're a deep team.
Absolutely crazy. Yeah, that's why I give Avs in five or six.
I mean, not to give away spoilers, but whoever comes out of the West between Vegas and Colorado, I think, is your representative in the finals.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah.
All right, so moving on to the last and final division, the Canadian division. We'll start with the 1-4 seed because we're going to, you know, make you sit on it to the last. But Toronto, Montreal, you know, obviously I'm taking Toronto.
Yeah.
Just to talk about this series a little bit. Toronto does scare me a little bit with their age on the bottom six. I mean, if, for example, we did sneak in, I thought we would take out Toronto. I'll say it now. I think our bottom six would have broke their bottom six by the third game, honestly.
Yeah.
But we didn't get in, so that's another story. I don't think Montreal has the horses to bang them out like that, and Montreal's just eking in on their own right. So Toronto's going to feast here it should be a fairly easy series for Toronto. But, I mean, Montreal does give them fits. And the only thing I think that could save Montreal, and I feel like this is the same thing every year, is if 2014 Price comes back and he's in the pipe. That's the only thing taking out Toronto this year, at least in this first round matchup, is if 2014 Price shows up, or bubble Price, whatever Price you want to show. But you need a peak Price to have a hope against Toronto here in round one. With all that being said, I haven't picked a sweep, so give me Toronto in four.
Who's your Toronto X factor? I know you just said Price would be your X factor if it was 2014.
For Toronto, man, it's got to be like a Hyman or somebody. Someone who's just going to play playoff hockey. You're not going to look to Marner and Matthews to get dirty. Hyman already does it. You know, it's kind of what made, Kadri a darling in Colorado. Someone's got to get dirty come the playoffs. So, I mean, for me in this series, I don't think Toronto's going to need an X factor. Their X factor is going to be that 2014 Price stays in the press box. If Hyman, I mean, they're not going to need an X factor this series. I don't think so.
Hyman is injured, might be coming back for the playoffs, so he'll be a little gingerly, playing a little gingerly at the beginning, but we'll see.
For all my Flames homies listening, TJ Brody, easy X factor for me. I mean, this guy's been nothing but a playoff stud. I think he's won one playoff round in his career, but hey, the guy's been lights out come playoff time. Yeah, I don't know. What do you got, Fish, for this series?
Yeah, I'm praying that the Oilers don't have to match up against Montreal. If Winnipeg could please win a game, that'd be awesome. But that being said, I do say Toronto as well. I think it's very unfortunate for Montreal right now because you got Gallagher out for 6 weeks. Weber's out. Price is injured with a concussion. Deneau's injured. You have the Bell line that we saw last night in the Oilers game, which is the Byron, Lekkonen, and Evans line, which they were flying. I'm not saying they're going to beat Toronto by themselves. I mean, they did beat Edmonton by themselves. They scored 4 goals or whatever it was, and they were the only line that scored for them, so that's the other bad part about that. Montreal's jam-packed full of huge defensemen, so like a Ben Sherratt and a Joel Edmondson, they're like 6'4 each respectively, so they got a big deep pairings. And then Anderson, kid's huge. If he starts throwing his body around, and he's gonna have to play huge for this team, he's their guy. I have Anderson as the biggest X factor for this team. And Toronto, X factor for me would be, as a whole, goaltending. Because, like I said before, I think if there's any possibility that Toronto is going to lose out coming out of this side of the league, is their goaltending. And to pinpoint it exactly on someone, it's got to be Campbell, because Campbell's their darling. Campbell's their 2014 Carey Price now. So I'm not going to pin it all on Rittich, because Rittich didn't come in to be the starting goalie. Campbell won that job. If Campbell blows it, Campbell blows it. And that's my X factor, is Toronto, is their goaltending shows up.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I mean, Freddie Anderson got lit up for 4 in his first start in the AHL, so he's probably nowhere near ready for NHL playoff hockey. You know, when Rittich got traded over there, he was playing pretty good in the Flaming Sea, so they got him playing at a good time, but, I mean, how much he's played in Toronto is another thing. And then, you know, Campbell's really hot, kind of started coming back to earth, but you know, he's found his game again. So like I said, off the top of this subject, I don't think Toronto needs an X factor to handle Montreal, who's just limping in. But all right, we saved the best series for last. I know you've been dying to talk about this one. Kipper just joined the booth here.
Let's go.
I don't know. You want to go first? You want me to go first? You got what's looking like the Jets and the Oilers, probably going to happen. You know what? You go first, Fish. How many games do you think the Oilers will handle the Jets? And you can just tell us right now.
Max of 6. A lot of people, before this 9-game slide, I would have said it was a way closer matchup. but they got Lowry back. I kind of thought them not having Lowry or all these guys that are injured. I know they don't have Ehlers right now, which is huge. He'd be an X factor for me.
And he might not be back for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's not for sure that he's going to even be back. Like, this team's having one of the worst slides in the league right now. I'm not confident in Hellebuck per se. He's not playing like Vezina Hellebuck. I always kind of didn't have the Vezina in mind when I hear Hellebuck, but yeah, Winnipeg has the potential to be a very strong playoff team. Like, if Dubois plays like how Dubois is built as a player, and I'm pretty sure he had a pretty decent playoff run there with Columbus. They're built for the playoffs. They got huge centers. They got huge players in Wheeler. They got Wheeler, Dubois, Lowry. They're like six. No one's shorter than 6'4" in that. And that's a playoff player right there. Yeah, their defense got completely blown up. They lost Myers. They lost Byfuglien. They lost all these guys that are huge, big playoff players. But just based off the slide and off of the one-on-one matchup, the Oilers have handled the Jets pretty dang well this year, and I'm pretty confident that if we do get matched up with the Jets, that we should win. They don't have the advantage of the whiteout, which plays a pretty big part, I would think, because that's freaking incredible. I got to be honest with you. I love that from Winnipeg, and I mean, Hellebuck could steal the whole series, honestly. But I want to pick the Oilers because I'm an Oilers fan. You got a lot of X factors. I'm not gonna cheap out and say McDavid and Dreisaitl. I think Smith, like we kind of touched on, like we got to ride on this 39-year-old goalie who can pull it. He was pulling his groin every week trying to make a cross crease desperation save, which is terrifying because then you're leaning on Mr. Swiss Cheese Mikko Koskinen and Stalock, which I would, like I said earlier, prefer Stalock to go in than Koskinen. And then the other guy that would be an X factor that's not in the net for Edmonton would be Kyler Yamamoto. Kyler Yamamoto is such a dog out there, but he's one of the most snake bitten players right now in the whole entire NHL. He had a perfect one timer lined up last game, stick snapped in half. Everyone knows that the poor guy's had a terrible month. Let's just hope he can get out of this slump and get that dynamite line, the Nuge, Dreisaitl, Yamo line flying out there. I got to go with Edmonton in six. What about yourself, Mr. Flames?
All right, listen. What year are we with Connor McDavid? Six? Is it 6 years?
Roughly. Is 24, right. 25?
So before I get into this, Connor McDavid is hands down the best dang hockey player on this planet. It isn't even close. He's probably the best we've ever seen. Better than the prime Crosby. With all that being said, he hasn't won squat. We're in year six of Connor McDavid. He's surrounded by a bunch of flunkies, excluding Dreisaitl and maybe Nurse this year. You know, this team's got zero depth. You hear it all year from different guests on the Team 1260. Their best chance is to put Dreisaitl and McDavid on a line together and then pray. Look up to the rafters where those five Stanley Cup banners are hanging and Gretzky's retired numbers and pray that the other three lines can keep the game even. That is their strategy. That's what they're going to go to. They might start these playoffs with Dry McDavid on separate lines, but we know that ain't going to last. They're going to get slapped together with Pool Party on there, and it's going to be one line versus Winnipeg's four. Now, I know Winnipeg is slumping, and they've lost nine straight, and nothing's going right for them. Whatever. As soon as you make the playoffs, it's a whole different ballgame. Everyone starts fresh. I hate betting against Connor McDavid, except when he plays the Oilers, or the Flames, sorry. With that being said, if I've learned anything over watching the Oilers and their struggles in the last, I'm 30, so 30 years, you're not going to get very much playoff success being a one-trick pony. And the Edmonton Oilers are a one-trick pony. They're McDavid or bust. I don't care how you want to dress it up. They are McDavid or bust. If McDavid isn't going scoring 4 points a night, the Oilers aren't winning very much. They're a plus 88 with him on the ice in goals and chances for. They're a minus 188 with him off the ice. What more do you need to say? Now, you want to look any further? Last time they're in the playoffs, how'd that depth work out for him? They got bounced by the 12th seed Chicago Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bounced by them in three games. They won one game. They were first in the West. McDavid, Draisaitl were tearing it up. Dry won a heart. They got bounced by a 12th seed. A one-trick pony isn't the way to win the playoffs. I'm gonna say it right here. I got Winnipeg in six. You're lucky if McDavid steals you one. You're lucky. Mike Smith, I mean, that's a lot to bet on. You're betting on McDavid, which is a guarantee, but then you're also betting on a 39-year-old Mike Smith who's had a pretty decent workload. And even if you rest him this week, you're giving him like 10 days off before his next start. That's also not a great spot to put your 39-year-old goalie as well. So I would actually play him in one of these last games. Yeah, but yeah, with all that being said, I don't believe in the one-trick pony. So yeah, I'm going to take Winnipeg in six. We all knew I was never picking Edmonton, but I tried to dress it up. So I had some validation.
Maybe next round matchup, you'll have to pick the Oilers, but I have a lineup, I guess, idea, and I'm not saying it'll work. I just want to hear what you think, but yeah, I agree with you 100% going into this year. And I think it was the first two games, the Jets handled us like nothing. Like we weren't even there. Their depth was just so much to match. And then they add Dubois. If they can get all that depth, they can get the Lowry and Kopp connection running again. They got that third line was playing better than our second and first line for a while there. They were one of the hottest lines in the league. And then you got Ehlers and those guys. You got Wheeler as well. You got a stud center and a stud winger per line. And that goes all the way down to the third line pretty much. The fourth line, that's your playoff line. But I want to say, hypothetically, and I'm not saying that I think this would work, but to make the Oilers a quote-unquote playoff team, hear me out.
You can't clone McDavid, but yeah. Oh. Let's hear it.
You duplicate McDavid.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you got
all
two players.
12 forwards. No, just you got to split up, and I know this is like, oh, this is what the Oilers should have done the whole entire time. But for the playoffs, especially with such a deep team, like forward-wise deep, like the
top nine is deep. You have to split up Dry McDavid.
But on top of that, with how good I personally think the Cahoon McDavid Puljujarvi line's playing great together, keep it, don't mess with it, leave it. Then that leaves you Draisaitl, and what I think Draisaitl likes playing with Yamamoto a lot. So, and you'd keep the Yamo there. I don't know, throw like an Archibald to Chase on and Neil, whoever's playing good. Third line, you put Nuge in there and you give him like a Gaetan Haas and a Ryan McLeod. Then he has some capable, fast players. He's not getting dragged by a guy with an anchor on his foot in Neil or Chason. Draisaitl's slower, so Chason might be able to speed up with him. So that's a solid two lines there. And then you got Nuge playing the third to match up a little better. And you got McLeod who can come in, play center. And then you got your other winger that you pick on that line, like Nuge, McLeod, and the Neil or Chason or Archibald. And then you got your Caroline, yes, the sweet Caroline.
Yeah, and you could start like that, but we all know it. As soon as nothing's not going well for the Oilers, they're going to slap McDavid and Draisaitl together. It's their get-out-of-jail-free card. It's their break glass in case of emergency. The only problem is, yeah, it works great in the regular season. They've proved it year after year. These guys have had no problems in the regular season. McDavid gets 16 points a night in his sleep. Draisaitl's been a mad producer himself. But come playoffs, when everyone locks it down, it's hard for McDavid and Draisaitl to continuously outscore another team. They need help. Edmonton doesn't have the help yet. Any help they get, they slap on their line.
Yeah.
Pool party could be help. but he's slapped on their line. He can't do it on his own. Yamamoto could be helped, but he's slapped to a Draisaitl. Like, they need depth that can drive their own play, and they just don't have it yet. And that's the sad thing about the build here in Edmonton is McDavid's been ready for 5 years, and they just haven't given him the supporting cast. It took Crosby 2 years to get to the finals, 3 years to win the dance.
True. Yep. I agree with that statement very much.
But with all that being said, we have really run up on it this episode. So we're actually going to have to save the awards for next year's season wrap-up, throw it in with the Flames. So from all of us here at the New Era Flames, as always, Flames Nation, you stay safe.
Have a good weekend. We'll see you guys next episode.